Good afternoon, Muskegon. This is Tony Williams for your financial show, What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial future. Today, we have the pleasure of having in the studio with us is the superintendent of the Muskegon Public Schools, who is going to share some information about budgeting and how the school is basically financed. But prior to that, like we always do, is talk a little sports. So we're going to start with high school. The Big Reds made a decent run in the playoffs, as well as the girls. And we were talking earlier, and both teams that we lost to, girls and boys, actually made it to the state finals.
Yep, that's right.
All right, Justin.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Justin has a very distinguished background in basketball. So he knows his basketball. So when he speaks about basketball, you should listen, because he knows about it. So who do the girls lose to in the tournament? Our girls.
Our girls, Muskegon. Yeah, they lost in the quarterfinals. First time in the history of the school that they got to the quarterfinals. They lost to East Lansing, who had Miss Basketball,
sure
I should
did.
Say. And East Lansing eventually lost in the state finals to Saginaw Heritage. So that was a really good feat and really good job by our Lady Big Reds.
Okay, so that says a lot about the program, whereas, you know, the team that beat us actually got to the state finals. So if we had won those games, we may have made it to the state finals. But I think that sets the stage for the coming year for our girls basketball program, because they, like you said, first time to the quarter. So it's like you take your steps. You knock on the door, and next year maybe we'll kick the door in.
Absolutely. And they had a young team, too. I mean, they had basically juniors and sophomores, so a couple seniors. So they have, I think, just about all their starters back. So it should be interesting next year. It puts a lot of pressure on Coach Walker and Coach Williams.
That's what we want, pressure, man. Put pressure on those guys, make them work hard.
Absolutely.
Which they do. They work hard. So, again, hats off to the Lady Reds, coaching staff, and players for a great season. And Mr. Guy and his boys' team also made a good run in the playoffs.
Right. They lost in the regional finals to also the eventual loser of the state
runner
championship.
Up, yeah.
Runner up would be, I say loser, it sounds
loser.
A little better when they beat us. But yeah, but
like
West
it.
Ottawa. So it was interesting. And I think that both teams had a really good season. And I think that Coach Guy really, I mean, he did a heck of a job coaching. Not a lot of height.
Nope.
And the guys played fast and they played furious and they were played under control. And it was very good to see. It was really good to see.
Yeah, I think the start of the season, most folks didn't give those guys really much of a chance of having a successful season.
Mm-hmm.
But through their hard work, their effort, and the coaching, they played very well and I think, you know, exceeded all expectations.
Right.
As far as getting into the playoffs and making a deep run.
Right.
So, again, that's great. Should have a good nucleus of kids coming back for next year. So, and you know as well as I do, Mr. Guy, we'll put the work in.
Oh, absolutely. And it's always hard for him. I tell people all the time, I don't make an excuse, but they have to realize that he has to contend with football. So he has to wait for football to get over to get some of his players. So by the time they get in shape, it's about 3 or 4 weeks into the season. So
yeah, because that happened this year. First game out the gate was Grand Haven.
Mm-hmm.
I think our football players were a week removed from playing in the state championship game, and Grand Haven beat them.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So when tournament time came around, they got another shot at him, right?
Right, and it wasn't so easy.
Okay, outcome was totally different.
Absolutely.
So high school, now we got to hit our college. NCAA just finished up this past weekend, and we did have a school from Michigan playing in the national championship game. Of course, it didn't turn out like we had planned. But, again, a team that probably wasn't expected to be there.
Absolutely. I always root for the Big Ten. I'm a Boilermaker,
oh, yeah.
But I always root for the Big Ten. It's hard to root for Michigan State and Michigan, but we always want to. But Villanova, it was just their night. It was just their year. I mean, they had a great year, and that game was just awesome. Every player played well, and they just played together.
Yeah, and it just showed that on that stage, Villanova, you know, again, exceeded, I think, all expectations.
Absolutely.
Because the kid that came off the bench was, like, phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And that's what we missed.
Yeah.
We have a bench guy that comes off, and he, you know, got into early foul trouble, so really he was never a factor. But I don't think he would have put up the kind of numbers that young kid from Villanova put up. I was very impressed with his game.
Absolutely. And not to even a pass on, man. I think a better story was really the women's basketball.
Oh,
It was awesome. I mean, just to watch – Two times in a row for that young lady to hit those game-winning shots, it was awesome.
It was
awesome.
Did. And there's probably not a lot of, you know, girls basketball fans, if you want to.
Right.
But that drew a lot of interest, especially when they beat Connecticut.
Right.
They always got the best of the best. But those were two outstanding basketball games. She hit the winning shot.
Absolutely.
At the buzzer.
Yeah.
And I think, what is she, a junior?
I think she's a junior.
She got another year. So yeah.
And you see that parity in girls basketball like you do in men's basketball, because the girls aren't scared of Connecticut. Connecticut is kind of like, in my time, I was just talking to the young fella before, in my time, Tennessee was like Connecticut. All the best basketball players went to Tennessee, Connecticut's like that. But now you have young ladies who are like, you know what? I don't want to go to Connecticut. I want to go to South Carolina or Louisville or Notre Dame,
State.
Right? And beat them. It's just fun to watch.
Yeah. We'd be remiss if we don't take our hats off to the Ferris State Bulldogs, right?
Absolutely. Our hometown guy getting it done over there in Ferris. That was nice.
That was
really nice.
Great, man. I'm so happy for him. The program and football. He played on a football team.
Absolutely,
made a run.
Right,
run for a state
national
championship.
Absolutely,
and then won it in basketball.
Yeah.
So, deep thrower, hats off, man. We love you from Muskegon.
Coach
Keep
Anise
up the good
as well.
Work,
Coach Anise as well. Absolutely.
All right. We got to give Coach Anise his props, too.
Absolutely.
And there are some more players headed your way from Muskegon.
Absolutely.
So we expect another championship in football as well as basketball.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're going to finish up on the NBA. Season's closing out. Pistons officially eliminated last night. Van Gundy, what's your take? To keep him, you know, or should we ship him?
Man, you know what? Detroit athletics is hard to watch the Pistons and to watch the Lions, man. It's just like we don't get the best coach, and sometimes we give the coach the GM power, and they have the power of the personnel, and they just don't get what they need to get. And I think Coach Van Gundy is a hard guy to play for. So
yeah.
you got to be hooked up. My coach Katie used to say you got to be hooked up and ready to go, because his personality is sometimes all over the place. But I think it's time for a change. I'm hoping with the Lions as well that a new fresh coach brings a different perspective. And I did like Coach Caldwell, but man, it was difficult. He would win just enough to keep his job, but not enough to get over that hump.
Get to that next level,
yep.
Man. You know what I mean? When we look around the league, there's only a few teams that have never made it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And we're one of them.
Yep. We still living on Barry Sanders' dreams.
Right.
And Isaiah Thomas and those guys, yeah.
Yeah. So let's hope they make the right decision in Detroit around the basketball program, because a lot of people that really care about the Pistons want to see them do well. But, front office, personnel, ownership need to take a real close look at who they have running the program and look to make some positive changes.
Absolutely. And I think when it comes to professional athletics, a lot of people give the coaches a lot of grief, but it's really the GMs. They got to get the best players out there. You talked about the Pistons being eliminated. Look at last night. They got eliminated by Philly. Two years ago, Philly wasn't even in the playoff talks, and now, I mean, they're in the playoffs and in the middle, and they've been winning without their best player on their 12-game winning streak. So
that's
huge.
And
it's huge.
Through the draft, for the most part.
Absolutely.
They've been
Absolutely.
Drafting young players. Yeah,
young
they've been
players.
Getting number high picks, but that's how it's done.
Yeah.
So, let's hope business can bounce back and be in the mix next year for a playoff position. So, we got a lot of information we want to share today with our listening audience, and it's around school budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our show talks about you budgeting your household, and budgeting a school system has the same components. You know, money in, money out. And
mm-hmm.
you got to learn how to, you know how to balance that. And you have to make some tough, hard decisions sometimes when it comes to balancing the budget. You can't expect to get out of debt or be debt-free if you can't understand the mechanics of resources that you have available and how they are, you know, you just distribute those out of your household. So what I'm going to do is pretty much turn this show over to our guest, Justin Jennings, school superintendent of Muskegon, and he has some questions that we've already pre-planned, and we're going to get some answers from him.
Yeah.
So the first one we have on our list is who is involved in the school budget? Who are those people that really sit down and talk about budgets?
Well, for us, the board is really in charge of the budget. You know, the superintendent is, I just kind of help guide the board with that. But the building principals are involved. My cabinet's involved, human resources, the finance department, and myself and the Board of Education. So those are really the people involved. We do involve the public. There are some times where we'll have some community meetings around different things that we're doing. We want to involve them more than we have in the past. So I think those are really the key people when it comes to the budget.
Because they're stakeholders too, right?
Absolutely.
Whatever happens, whatever comes out of these budgets, you know, are going to affect us, good, bad, or indifferent. So as taxpayers and supporters of public schools, you're right. They should have, you know, some kind of a forum, an open forum to talk about where they like to see this district go.
Right. And I think that's something that what you brought up is a great point. We want people to have a voice. And I think in the past, that's been something that people don't want to. But we want people to have a voice because these are their scholars. These are our scholars. They need to be involved in what's going on in that decision-making process.
Yeah. We're talking about investing in the future of this community. Mm-hmm. And that's the school system.
Right.
It's the cornerstone of that. So, okay, that's good. So what is the role and the purpose of the school budget?
Well, at the beginning of every year, we have to start the year off with a balanced budget. We can't start off with a negative budget. So it's a mandate by the state. So we can't. So that means if we need to make cuts or do anything like that, that's what we have to do. So the purpose is really to guide educating our students. And I think it's important, and I'm going back so you could hit me later, but going back with a little history lesson, what people have to say, and it's also a little political, so I might get in trouble for it, but the way that the school is funded was in 1993, we have what we call Proposal A. And Proposal A was funded based on the homestead and non-homestead taxes. Mm-hmm. We can get into that later. But one of the things you have to understand is in 1993, industry in Muskegon, industry in Grand Rapids was totally different.
Totally different, yeah.
So Proposal A has caused what we say were some districts to be inside the they're outside of what Proposal A intended. So I'll give you an example. Wyoming Public Schools, mm-hmm. even though they have the same population as us, their per pupil funding is about $11,000 a kid, because at that time you had 5, 6, 7, 8 GM plants, you had Ford plants. So that was figured into the formula from what we call the school aid fund. That was figured. But now you have a school like Muskegon where it's anywhere, I mean, about 8,000, we roughly estimate about $8,000. So you can see your zip code really determines, you know, the finance that you get for your schools. And you can go to a Bloomfield Hills over in Detroit.
Ooh.
Theirs is like $16,000.
Okay.
So it's not distributed the correct way. So,
okay.
Or I would say equally.
And when you use that as an example, mm-hmm. just, you know, that's like a $3,000 difference per pupil.
Absolutely.
And if you multiply that by the number of students in that district, that's a huge difference, man.
It's a huge
hundreds
difference.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's millions and millions of dollars, Mr. Williams. It's astronomical. And I think that we've been nervous. And I say we because I'm part of the education system. We've been nervous to look at changing it because politically, I mean, you think of a Bloomfield Hills, it goes from 16,000. If you get a corrective formula, they may be at 9. So
okay.
Now you're looking at something totally different.
Okay.
So we have to figure out a different way to do it.
Yeah, I would say so. That's just too big of a discrepancy because, you know, the main purpose in all of this is to give all our kids an equal opportunity for learning. So they'll have the state-of-the-arts type of equipment, technology. But yet, like you say, if one school district is getting a lot more money than the other, they're mm-hmm. at a disadvantage.
Absolutely. And it's basically what we've done is we reverse Brown versus the Board of Education. Basically what we're doing. We're going back to community schools, segregated schools. And I said I'm getting political, so you stop me
but
if you want me to.
You're right on
but
the money, though.
But it's really, really what's happening because even now, I mean, there's no Paper Mill Hill. There's no Brunswick property.
No.
We're getting money from that time, but the revenue is not coming in, which is the reason why our state is constantly trying to balance budget because that industry that we used to have is not here anymore. Yeah.
And I don't know how we extract dollars from tourism.
Mm-hmm.
in order to help benefit the school system.
Right.
I don't think that's in that equation versus it's so much tied to the property tax equation.
Right.
So if you live here, you do business here, it's a whole different story than us trying to be some kind of a community that brings in tourism. But how yet do we extract money out of that in order to help support our school system?
Right. And you didn't ask this question, but I added it. I should have given it to you before. But that transitions right into what I want to say next, how the school aid is funded. First of all, sales tax, which at the time was only 4%, but it got raised to 6%. So 60% of the proceeds from sales tax go to school aid fund. 2 cents for every 25 cents on a pack of cigarettes. So people think you get money from a lot of money from there. And the other one, which is the huge misnomer, is the lottery. The lottery, it doesn't totally fund schools, but people have that misnomer.
Well, they actually market that on television. They talk about the amount of money that the lottery gives to the school system. And in what you're saying is that is not true.
Well, they do give them money, but it's not. They make it seem like the money from the lottery, totally everything goes to the school aid fund, but that's not the truth. Just a percentage. And it's not a percentage like people say. I don't want to lie and say the wrong amount, but it could be anywhere from $40 to $60 million. But it's not. That's not enough when you think about the kids and what we have. It's not enough to fund it. You also have the industrial and commercial facilities tax, which is paid for just for in-formula districts. So that's what I talked about before. The Brunswick property or the GM, that's what you had before. That's still in there. You got commercial forest tax, which is the same as above. It depends on that. And then you have the last one is the not the last one, but for taxes, the liquor tax. So 4% of that goes to schools as well. So not a lot of people know how that formula works. And then the other two pieces is what we talked about before, the homestead and non-homestead tax. So homestead is your primary residence. So when you go to vote for a bond, one meal is basically equal about $100. And that's the other one. And then the other one is non-homestead. So if you live in Muskegon or if you have a vacation property in Muskegon, we also get revenue from that as well.
Or rental property. You're a landlord.
Right, or a landlord, absolutely. Right. So those that's the way that the school is funded. That's the way it's funded.
And, you know, to piggyback on what you're saying is that we look at a lot of the past industries that used to, from a taxation standpoint, contribute a lot of dollars to the coffers. And just today I came down by the Y and Shaw Walker at one time was a major contributor. They're gone. Anaconda's gone. I mean, there's just many, many factories that were here that was a part of that tax base in order to generate the revenue that was needed to run these school systems. Now they're gone.
Right, right. But so the thing about it is they're gone, but we still get that percentage of funding. So where does the money come from? So the state is basically robbing Peter to pay Paul. And what you get in some instances, and we get to all the questions, you'll get into that later. In some instances, they give us money, but it has restrictions. So they may give us, the governor just gave us, you know, he said, oh, we're going to give education this much. But as in the education world, we say, okay, you're going to give us that, but we're waiting to see what's that tied to. Because it could be only for this or only for that. But so it's always, they may say that they're giving more money, but it could be restricted to only using it for a certain thing.
That's the old saying about strings attached.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. What are the major categories for the school district's budget?
Basically, our major categories, our revenues is just revenues and expenses, just like in the household. So what's coming in? We get money from local, federal, and state.
Okay. So if you had to list them, the biggest, well, probably salaries, of course, right? That's going to be the number one expenditure for a school district is going to be salaries.
I'm just being conservative. Over 60% of all the money we get in goes to salary and benefits. That includes retirees.
Oh.
So before we ever even get to instruction for kids, we're paying people, which is, I mean, what you have to do. You people don't want to work for free. So I think that's like a big thing too. I mean, it's huge. You have to pay people. You have to pay teachers. You have to pay administrators. You have to pay custodians. You have to pay the lunchroom aides. So you have to pay people. And also you have to pay into their retirement and benefits as well.
It's coming.
And healthcare.
We covered a situation like this earlier on one of our shows in the auto industry, and it's called legacy cost.
Mm-hmm.
Before GM builds one vehicle,
right,
the legacy cost is already at $15,000 per vehicle.
Right, absolutely. And that's what we're struggling with right now in Michigan, because years and years ago, the pension fund that we have for educators kind of was used for something different. So we've been basically trying to pay back a loan that somebody else took out already. So
which is not uncommon.
Right.
They take out of that pension fund, saying we're going to use this money, but we're going to pay it back.
Right.
And that never happens.
No. Yeah, they pay it back, but they pay it back with this on the backs of the same taxpayers who owns the pension.
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. That's something else. So now, is that a part of the driving force behind privatizing, I guess, some of the services, such as the busing,
right,
transportation, janitorial services, things like that, is in order to try to balance the budget. Because when you look at what it costs a school district to run a bus system versus what it costs to basically outsource it to a dean,
mm-hmm,
there's got to be some savings in that. That's the driving force behind doing it.
I mean, the savings is really that pension piece and the health care piece. Those different pieces are huge savings for us. I mean, you right off the bat, I mean, we I think the state requires us to pay about $16,000 a year is what is capped at for insurance. And I mean, insurance may be anywhere from $28,000 to $32,000 a year if you have a family or more. So we only pay $16,000 and the rest comes at, you know, at the cost of the employee. So that's something. If we're talking to fixes, that's one of the things we really in our country, we really need to fix is the healthcare system.
Oh. Yeah. Well, somebody tried to fix it.
Right.
And didn't get a whole lot of support. Now we got somebody that's trying to unfix it.
Right.
So that's unfortunate because we all have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You kind of covered where do the resources from the school budgets come from.
Right. So for us, I wanted to make sure we got the history lesson with Proposal A, but to answer the question directly, we have local property taxes, which we talked about, the non-homestead and homestead. We have state revenue, federal grants, such as we got Title I, which is we use for at-risk students. I mean, for learning at-risk students, we have the at-risk 31A. So there's like factors for like a student if they have a parent incarcerated, if they were pregnant. I mean, if their parent was pregnant when they were a teen, or if they're pregnant now, if they were homeless. So we use 31A at-risk money for different things like that. There's like 12 different factors. We also have Title III, which is bilingual, our bilingual fund, and then for us locally, Muskegon, we have what we call a school improvement grant. So Nelson was on the top to bottom list, and they were in the lowest 5% list. So we got federal money that was funneled through the state. So it's really state money for the school improvement grant as well. Then you also have money for busing. We get money for special ed busing. So any special ed money comes, and also school readiness. So that would be preschool and anything like that, Head Start, those things. So those are really the way that we get funding.
Okay, which is, I think, extremely important to get children started as soon as possible through, like you say, the preschool or the Head Start program,
mm-hmm,
so they can get acclimated to learning. So we have children that are in the third grade that are reading at the third grade level and not having kids that's in the fifth grade reading at a third grade level.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that's the impetus behind that. This is not on our list, but it just came to me. What is the impact, in your opinion, on the school of choice? How does that fit in all of this?
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, they make no mistakes about it. And you know me well, and I'm very vocal. Sometimes I get in trouble for saying the things that I think are right for our kids, no matter if they're from Muskegon Heights or North Muskegon. It's huge. School of choice is huge because it, first of all, we have a lot of urban schools have a negative connotation of what's going on in the buildings.
Absolutely.
And the teaching and learning that's going on. But at the end of the day, the school of choice, I mean, parents who have the savvy or who can move their children out, they do. And for the misnomer of it's better, it's greener on the other side, but there's other factors you have to take into consideration. I mean, being around your peers is huge.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of people. I grew up in Grand Rapids. I had a lot of my friends who went to East Grand Rapids, and they talked about how African American, how they felt alone, they were isolated, they were in this school, but what were they really getting? And
right.
When you look at those factors, school of choice, it makes a huge impact on us.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, community schools. I mean, if it was anything like it was when I was growing up, you know, it was everybody basically went to this elementary school and mm-hmm. you gravitated to the, you know, middle school or junior high, and you went to school with these same people for your entire career in high school.
Right.
And it makes a difference because that, you know, you develop these long, lifelong type of relationships with individuals.
Absolutely.
And I think that's key to keeping this community connected.
Right.
Keeping
right.
us all trying to go down the same road and want the same things for our grandchildren that's coming.
Right, and it brings up a great point too. I mean, I'm a child of desegregation. So when I went my high school, I went to Grand Rapids Central, and we had at the time we had the most diverse high school in the whole state of Michigan. I
wow.
mean, it was like 40% white, 40% African American. We had Hispanic. We had a huge Hispanic population, Indian, Native American population, Pacific Islander. So I grew up in a different thing. As a matter of fact, I just had lunch with my best friend who's Caucasian, and he's an attorney.
Okay.
So I think it's huge. But the big thing, and we go back to politically in Brown versus the Board of Education again. There was a reason why they did that, and a lot of people talk about separate but equal. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the history, that had nothing to do with it. The when you look at the ruling, it specifically states the reason why they did that is because those schools we're talking about who steal our kids from school of choice were inferior. They had better opportunities for all students, and they felt as though every student should have that. And I guess for us, our thing is why can't our schools have that the way they are now? I mean, if we are the way we are, why can't we have computers for every kid? Why can't we have that money like everybody else?
Yeah. So that totally goes against separate but equal.
Absolutely.
Okay, because if it was equal, we'd have the same amount of money as the Bloomfield Hill School District per student, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That would make a huge difference in some of the things that we want to do in our community for our school system.
Yeah.
So it's a broken system. No doubt, it is a broken system, and unfortunately, we have a person that is ahead of the education department that doesn't have a clue.
Yeah,
we
need to help her out.
Does not have a clue.
Definitely.
So, with that, where we at, Mr. Jennings? I got on my soapbox and I missed a spot here. When our school budget spent?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. School budgets. When are they spent? I mean, we spend it during the year. We do what we call drawdown. We actually, not a lot of people know this, the state doesn't fund us all the money at one time, or they fund it to us at multiple times. So what it actually happens is the state has to give us a loan.
Mm.
Yeah, and this is for every school district, so let's not jump off and say it's Muskegon.
Well,
yeah,
mistreating us, right? Giving us a loan.
Nope, the state has to actually loan us the money, and then they just get it back later on, because our fiscal budget goes from July 1 to June 30 every year. So that's the way it normally works, and we use this money, you know, basically pay salaries, instructional costs, support costs, utilities, and different things like that. We look at ways to this morning I was talking to my finance director, and we're looking at ways to possibly get some solar panels or something different to kind of ease the burden of our energy costs, because we have some great historic buildings. But when you have great historic buildings, you have a lot of holes, a lot of leaks, and it's a lot of energy loss. So that's something we're looking at as well to help save us money.
Yeah, because a couple years ago, you went through and did do some LED replacements of lights in hopes of, again, trying to save some money.
And that has. We belong to a consortium called Middle Cities, and they do a great job with our energy pricing. But we want to – if we every penny we can save is penny that goes back into the classroom to support our scholars, and that's what we're about.
Absolutely. Don't need to give it to the utility companies.
No.
And I think give me your crystal ball, all right? You said June 30th is our fiscal year, and then it goes to July for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So how? What do you think? What are we going to be at from a fiscal standpoint?
I think we're going to be fine. I mean, we're going to have to look at and make some of our things we're doing a little more leaner. I think we'll still have our 5% fund balance, which for urban school, which is phenomenal. We have a great I sing her praise. We have a great finance director. I mean, we'll have to look at, you know, our building costs and those different things and our declining enrollment. I mean, we didn't talk about that, but we're funded based butts in the seat equals dollars.
Right.
We lost 380 students last year, which basically equals about $3 million for us. So you can't function with the same personnel and doing those same things with the $3 million loss. So we have to look at what we need to do and how we can be a little more responsible with when we lose students. And,
okay.
And you can never estimate. We never can estimate because over the last few years we gained students, but it was mostly because they came from a neighboring district that was kind of shutting down.
Okay.
So that was a trend in urban schools that we didn't often see. So it's something that we would definitely have to work on. So
also, I guess a part of this is that we as a community, we need to promote, we need to market, we need to sell folks on Muskegon school system so they will enroll their kids in our school system, which will increase the enrollment, which will increase the revenue, right? I mean, because it's so easy to pick up, like you said earlier, and go where you think the grass is greener.
Right.
But I think we have a lot of things to offer in our school system, in our district, that other schools don't have.
Absolutely. I mean, we have great teachers like Mr. Williams. I mean, he's probably one of the James Brown of education in Muskegon. He's one of the hardest working men. When I go in his classroom, it seems like everybody's working, and he has about 40 kids, and he keeps bringing them. So yes. And we have some great administrators, and I sing praises to all of our administrators and administration as well as our teachers. I mean, we're an urban school district with 6 people who have their PhDs. That's not something often you see in a regular school, but to see that in an urban school, we have people who are striving for the top. We have a couple teachers who are, one teacher, I think if I'm not mistaken, an art teacher who's finishing up her PhD, who's finished with her PhD, just working on her dissertation. So
that's amazing.
Yep.
That's great. And hopefully that is the kind of, things that'll happen. It'll show people that this district is really, truly concerned about making our students the best.
Absolutely.
That can be offered in West Michigan. And you need to bring your students, your children, to Muskegon Public School System, because in my opinion, we're second to none. I know of a family that had moved from Granville
mm-hmm.
to Muskegon, and if anybody knows about West Michigan, we know what the population of Granville is.
Mm-hmm.
We know what that makeup is. And they came to this district, and it was like one of the most unique, outstanding experiences that these young folks had ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard nothing but great things from their parents about this school district. But they had the intestinal fortitude to say, you know what, we're gonna put aside all the stereotypes about what people say about Muskegon, and we're gonna put our kids in that school system. They did that, and they were more than grateful that they did it. And if they had to do it over again, they would. And they probably would tell other folks they should really consider doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
And I think you know who I'm talking
about. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Great, great. 2 great kids, great, great students.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Mr. Jennings, in closing, what do you got for us?
I appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully you'll invite me back, and maybe we can get some more questions out if there's some more questions that we can answer. And I, just for people to know, I also do a parent coffee.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken, every first Wednesday of the month is on our Facebook page. And so far, I haven't got a lot of parents. I don't normally get 1 or 2 parents, but I think, I mean, like I said, this is a new day. We really want your input. I mean, I want you to come and for us to have a conversation and let you know the resources we have to offer and what we want to do to move forward to help your scholar in our district. So it'd be nice to have some parents come out and talk about that as well, talk with.
So if there are parents that's listening, you mm-hmm. can call the school board, the administration.
Yep, 231-720-2004.
And find out more about this parent coffee,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the kind of stuff that we need to do in order to make sure that we continue to have a school system that we can support. We don't want to lose our school system into receivership.
Right.
But it's going to take the community as a whole, collectively, to make sure that doesn't happen by supporting our superintendent, our school board, and the school system as a whole. So if you have nothing else, Mr. Jennings, we'll close the show. This is Tony Williams with my host, Justin Jennings, superintendent of Muskegon Public School Systems. And we'd like to thank 103.7 The Beat for giving us this opportunity to share this information. So have a good day, Muskegon.